light of the middle way, enclosed in the egg, embryonic, full of ardor, oppressed. That makes sense, huh? Mm-hmm. Fully expectant, dreamlike, awaiting lost memories, as heavy as stone, hardened, molten, transparent, streaming bright, coiled on itself. I think the biggest thing there, I think really kind of what you were saying, Jane, that out of the two opposites, a middle point is established. Anything else you want to say on that? So we go to the next one. This is the one I like.
Ooh, that is pretty.
Yeah.
That is... Wow.
That's wow, yeah.
Yeah.
Just take a moment and let it sink in, maybe. Big change. Amen, you are the Lord of the beginning. Amen, you are the star of the east. Amen, you are the flower that blooms over everything. Amen, you are the deer that breaks out of the forest. Amen, you are the song that sounds far over the water. Amen, you are the beginning and the end.
I don't know why, but for some reason this image fits better for me with the previous incantation, the light of the middle way. Because he says molten, transparent, streaming bright, coiled on itself. That fits better for this image to me.
I see what you're saying.
Well, it's almost as though what you read prepares us, and then prayer happens, and that's the bursting forth of the fire.
Could this then become this?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Verse 4.
Yeah.
Well, go back again, right. Gary.
Because look at the way the...
I think it's the fire around it. It's concentrated into the serpent, and then verse 4.
It's almost though as if that column and the symbol for Isis, the horns, have now become the snake. If you look at the coloration.
Yeah.
And that fire has now really become molten flame.
Something really happened at that day.
Yeah.
Boy.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That was quite a day.
What was he feeling when he painted that picture?
That's the kind of painting that, you know, you just want to put away your brushes and say, no, I'm not going to paint anything now. It's been done.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It just strikes me that way.
It is a culmination, I think.
Yeah. But, you know, now there's a differentiation in that secret fire. And because the secret fire is below...
Yeah.
You know, where the fire usually is, the earthly fire, but the tree comes up now into the waking world, or into our outer reality. So there's like a differentiation. That flame was just the middle way, the flame. Now I see a differentiation going on.
Yep.
It's like there's this new spiritual attitude emanating from below.
Yeah. It seems to me this is the synthesis of the instinctual and the spiritual.
And so it's like he's using all those symbols of Sophia as the snake, as the Logos, as the rising sun or fire, Tao of the middle way.
Yeah.
And you know, Tao is also called the Shining Valley Serpent.
I didn't know.
That's the middle way.
And I took that as his tongue. And now that he has this new understanding, he can't speak with four tongues. Now it's like, you'll be speaking with all the opposites included.
That's a nice way to put it, yeah.
And mm-hmm. it's still surrounded by that moon eros consciousness. That blue color that mm-hmm. was in the moon kind of symbol previously is still supporting the words of his mouth. And that there's a fire contained in that too, like that red kind of vein thing that mm-hmm. runs throughout.
And now we really have this spirit born in matter.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the dark earthly surrounding of that flame?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's in the Vedas, it says that Brahmana Spati is the god of the word, so that ties it to Logos mm-hmm. again, who obliterates enemies of the gods. He's also the planet Jupiter, and he leads the aspirant on the divine path. So very similar symbolism to Sophia on one hand, and then who was it that Jupiter was also associated with in alchemy? Well, Jupiter is associated with Santa Claus, for example.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Way back. That's what I was told.
Huh. Planet or the god?
The planet. Same thing, I guess,
uh-huh.
if you go back far enough. Mm-hmm. That's yes, exactly. Because that Hindu god is the one, you know, we talk about Sophia as holding the pattern of our fate, or it seems to be have a very similar role. And then they both share that logos and fire
mm-hmm.
symbolism.
Mm-hmm.
I think the words that he's using here are so tied together with the Lord, star, flower, fear,
mm-hmm.
song, beginning. It's so tied with nature and the era that it's just like embedded in it. That
mm-hmm.
Now his words will be born as of
the animal and not just
thinking. Well said, yes. It kind of reminds me of when you write a poem and make it happen. Just sort of, it just happens. It just connected to you.
Do I see a hand back there?
Yeah. Could you go back to the other one? The last one? Yeah. It made more sense after I saw the next one. This shape is very much like many of the altars that are seen in Roman homes. And so I put that together with the sliver of the moon that's right above it, right below the moon.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a sliver of the moon, which reminds me of influence and the fire. It looks very much like Native American Northwest coast.
I agree.
It's so ancient. And then if you go to the next one.
Oh, yeah.
This seems like we've already said that it seems like culmination. That all this has come together, and having just been near Vesuvius, it's just like everything was compacted together and just erupted in this wonderful explosion of fire and
mm-hmm.
Logos and Eros and everything.
Anything else? Well, I definitely think we've hit a transition. And we get boat. Mm-hmm. Which, according to the footnote, takes us back to that boat. Remember that one?
Did you notice that the oarsman has four arms?
No. Be my guess.
Well,
I don't know if we can see it very well. But there's an arm holding this, there's another arm, and then there's two on the oar.
Oh.
Maybe a sixth limb looks like a beetle.
Mm-hmm. Well, since he's on this Hindu kick,
he's taking the sun disk somewhere, which is what
Yeah. Looks
like a sun disk to me.
Yeah.
And the shape of his head is like the hat, Sammy, that we saw so often.
Yeah.
That indicates from the Middle East.
Yeah, what's that called? There's a name for it.
Yeah.
Peleus?
Something like that.
Yeah.
It looks like he's got a sort of stylized flame tree in his hand. Pointing.
Oh, on his left hand.
Mm-hmm.
In his left hand.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Stylized, what did you say?
Flame tree. That middle way.
Hmm. Now, I had an idea about this. Can anyone read my mind?
We're getting closer, but not quite.
Well, remember, the boat thing is about the Egyptian prototype is that the sun travels across the sky in a boat and then travels under the ocean in a boat. And so it dies and it's reborn. So that I think we're getting, again, the death and rebirth of the god in this image. So what we're seeing now is the rebirth of that old idea, what is God? Well, God is a big thing coming out of a mouth cooked in a flame. Which is the same thing as the path. That's the Tao. So he says, one word that was never spoken, one light that was never lit up, and unparalleled confusion, and a road without end. So God has become a road.
Unless he's referring to the path of the sun, which is almost seemingly around the earth.
Yeah, but it could be the same thing. That the path the sun charts out is our personal fate.
I thought it was interesting that, you know, it looked like he was following the monster.
Mm-hmm.
Like, left hand pointing to follow that monster.
Uh-huh.
And,
I think that was the
underworld
was given direction. Yep. And I don't know whether there's another monster underneath the one. Almost like going in another direction. Ship. Mm-hmm.
Certainly
echoes
the
pattern of the ship.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I looked into Hindu mythology for the forearms. Usually refer to Ganesha or Ganesh, who's a development of Brahmanaspati, the prayer god.
Oh.
So that would go along with the symbolism he's given us so far. And Ganesh is able to rule over both good and evil alike and is often depicted with those four arms. And so Ganesha oarsman would be the one that knows how to navigate over the beast below and to control malignant spirits. That's the Hindu mythology.
I was at Office Max, and the guy at the copy center had a tattoo of Ganesh on his arm. It just freaked me out. I went bananas, and I asked if I could take a picture of it, and he let me take a picture of it. And it's an elephant.
Yes.
With four arms.
Yes.
Yeah. Where would we, you know? And where would you find that? The guy didn't, I'm sure the guy didn't know Hindu mythology, but he had a tattoo of Ganesh on his arm.
Yeah. And Ganesh is also wisdom.
Uh-huh.
So that ties us back into the Sophia aspect. So it's all like...
It's all linking together.
Yeah.
Well, you know, Kuan Yin, she would often be on a dragon and being able to navigate the sea and know where to go. And she's originally from, or the legend anyway, originally in the East.
In the East.
Yeah. Okinawa, I think, the green and China.
Huh. She's the goddess of kindness?
Compassion.
Compassion.
Compassion and mercy. Kind of a wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
And discernment. I wondered if that could depict, you know, the journey that he's now on and how there still is that conscious that could cause problems because of the way it does look like a monster.
Right. We don't know whether that's benevolent or not.
Pardon?
We don't know whether that's benevolent or malevolent.
No, we don't.
Well, the beast does come up in the next picture or so, right?
Yeah.
The next couple of pictures to threaten him, that death beast.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, where that newfound consciousness can be thrown over at any time.
Yeah.
But you were associating the beast with the vehicle that brings the sun back through under the ocean to sunrise?
More the boat.
Well, the boat.
Yeah. And the boat, the boat has to fight the monster every sunrise. I don't know whether it's the same monster or not.
Is it depicted, the monster depicted in the Egyptian image that you showed?
No. I don't think so. Where is it? Oops, sorry, no objection. I couldn't find any of the monster. There might be, but I don't know. Egyptian art that well to put my finger on it. That's a benevolent figure.
Mm-hmm. And
I think this actually might be sunset. In other words, the boat is about ready to go into the ocean. I'm not sure.
Where's the sun?
Beetle.
Beetle.
Well, let me see. I think this is the sun god. And this is the sun god in his beetle aspect. Meaning... rising from his own dung. Are you familiar with that myth, Carl?
Yes. Somewhere.
Okay. Anything else on that?
Well, I was trying to connect that to the words again. One word that was never spoken, one light that was never lit up, an unparalleled confusion, and a road without end.
Let's see.
So you're basically what you're saying is the Tao.
Well, if I'm right, The road would be the Tao. That's where I was going. And this never spoken, never lit up would might mean this is a new concept. It has not yet been articulated in the West. It has been in the East, but not in the West.
In other words, it's still below consciousness right now, so he's following it to see where it might rise above and make.
I don't know whether it's above or below consciousness. I don't know.
Well, that snake sure makes it look like it. Something important about it has come to consciousness.
The snake meaning?
With the...
Here?
With the tongue that is...
Oh, meaning that it's already emerged. Huh?
Something has come conscious there, would you say?
Yeah, I would say. So if we go with that, then this would indicate that new insight has reached consciousness. Now, we'll have to see what we do with this dragon, but I first thought, well, he's following the dragon. And it shows that the dragon and the spirit run on parallel lines.
That makes sense.
In other words, see, Freud says the dragon, remember, I think we always have to remember where Jung was. He was separating himself out from Freud. And so Freud would say, well, that dragon is pure chaos. And Jung would say, oh no, it's a guide. A dangerous one, but it's a guide.
Where are you seeing the dragon?
He means the big fish.
Big fish.
Well, and that's, if you look at that image, what you say really resonates, because below the beast, there's a shape like
reflection,
like the barge itself. You know, as a yes, I correspond to the barge in some way, as you say.
That was my thought, but who knows? Those teeth do look ominous.
Mm-hmm. No, this might just, the last thing I was thinking, I mean, I know there's always been a Levitan or whatever, that's been an ancient,
Leviathan? Yeah.
That's been an ancient mystery and stuff, but I was also thinking the old god image was the fish, so as the new god image surfaces, if you cling to the old god image,
Well, that could be. Because Leviathan does appear in the book of Job. And the book of Job is the one place where Behemoth and Leviathan appear together, as far as I'm aware. And that's why Jung called Behemoth and Leviathan the psychopathic aspect of God. So that would fit. Let's just see what we do with this dragon. I'm just one or two pictures ahead of you, so. Anything else? Whoops. Let's see. I forgive myself these words as you also forgive me for wanting your blazing light.
So that solar disk looks like it flames up as the flame tree, the middle way, and now it's in a temple.
Mm-hmm.
It's properly put in a temple.
Mm-hmm.
It's been like if we look at it as a series of images, it's been transported, that sun disk, over the depths. Now it's in a temple. And those ancient aspects of the feminine are brought together, the flame tree and the bull aspect. The sun, you know, the Isis aspect and then the flame tree aspect
are now one.
And I guess Izdubar too, because he's the horns also. They're all enshrined together.
Yeah, it's like it's been put in the right spot.
And again, mm-hmm. this speaks to me of the previous words, the one life that was never lit up.
Mm-hmm.
It's not lit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
And it's almost as if those other flame trees have burned out and gone to ash.
Yes.
So mm-hmm. what may have once been his ruling system, power, prestige, and all of those things
uh-huh.
have now burnt out.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's got this one life.
Mm-hmm. And it's like my fantasy is that the flame has caught on and is warming the world now.
Right, because the temple would be the place where the mm-hmm. people would come
mm-hmm.
and gather.
So if we took this about him, it could be that all that fire he's gone through now is going to find a place in his work. Or will be what
he shares with the world.
Yeah, and what fires his work and what he shares with the world.
Because when you go in those ancient churches, what you see as frescoes on the wall is the story that's being told of the faith. I mean, some of them were very Christian, that we
mm-hmm.
saw, of course, but even we got into ancient Mithraeum, you remember that old Mithraeum, and there were frescoes there, too.
In the ancient...
A Mithraeum, where the Mithra...
Mithras, oh.
And...
They had frescoes there?
There were frescoes
wow.
on the wall. Mm-hmm. And one little, it was like a frieze of Psyche and Eros.
Wow.
It was quite a surprise to see
yeah.
that. Yeah. Again, under the earth, we have to go down, down, down.
Amazing. Okay. Let's see. Yeah, that's 57. Rise up, you gracious fire of old night. I kiss the threshold of your beginning. My hand prepares the rug and spreads abundant red flowers before you. Rise up, my friend, you who lay sick. Break through the shell. We have prepared a meal for you. Gifts have been prepared for you. Dancers await you. We have built a house for you. So
there's more on that one on the other side.
Your servants are ready. We drove herds together for you on green fields. We filled your cup with red wine. We set out fragrant fruit on golden dishes. We knock at your prison and lay our ears against it. The hours lengthen, tarry no longer. We are wretched without you, and our song is worn out. So I think that's about the cell finding its place on the earth.
Huh? It looks like that flame tree's become an altar.
Mm-hmm.
So the sacrifice has been
mm-hmm.
prepared and laid out.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I just always want to compare this back to the earlier God is a fantasy. Look how far we've come. Now he's a servant. You see what saying God is a fantasy spares you? Serving this experience. We may have to, well, I don't know if we'll get through the next one. We get started with it.
I think there's a lot to that. Especially that footnote makes it seem...
Go ahead. What footnote?
Well, We're talking about image 58.
57.
57, that's 57.
Oh, I thought you were moving on.
Well, yeah, but I will if you're ready. Do you want to look at 58?
Mm-hmm.
And what footnote are you referring to, Carol?
The one next to the notation
yes.
for the image.
Right.
What's going on?
Tonight, awful and formidable avalanches come crashing down the mountainside.
When they say dreams, that's his dream journal?
I thought it was an essay called Dreams.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. I'll check. But I think it's an essay on disease.
Really?
Well,
because they just give dates.
Yeah, I'll have to check the list of sources. So I think he did write a dream essay early, but like you say, so this is January 17th, 1917.
And the words that follow are his dream, correct? This dream, it says, is explained in the black book.
Well, yeah. I was taking it as, I guess you're right, yeah. Yeah, you're right.
Then he talks about this image that we're going to look at. I produce a drawing with red spots on page 58 of Liber Novus. I read about the current formation.
Where are you?
I'm in the footnote 129.
But what line? Oh, yeah, I read about the current formation of huge sunspots.
Then he asks, what fills him with fear and horror,
yeah.
What is falling down from the mountain.
Yeah.
And so he's associating all that with this image.
Or with the emotional state of mind
mm-hmm.
he was in.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I understood it.
Yeah.
And that ends with so that the God does not consume him in flame. I had to think about Nietzsche.
Right.
Consumed in the flame of the God that rose up in him. And here he's being cautioned to be protected, to go, can he say, into the stone.
So in the black book, yeah, it sounds like it's an active imagination. Jung asks what it is that fills him with fear and horror. His soul tells him to help the gods and to sacrifice to them. She tells him that the worm crawls up to heaven, begins to cover the stars with a tongue of fire. He eats the dome of the seven blue heavens. She tells him he will also be eaten and that he should crawl into the stone and wait in the narrow casing until the torment of fire is over. Almost as if there's something the human being isn't supposed to actually observe in this whole process, or something so intense and mysterious that you don't look upon it. I don't know.
Or he's not strong enough to look upon it.
Yes.
What I get out of this is what he's going through when he's painting these pictures. Awful and formidable avalanches of emotion come crashing down on him.
The worm is crawling into the heavens and destroying his old ruling order. That could be pretty horrifying,
yeah.
Especially if the self hasn't manifested enough yet to give him the ego strength.
And if it's up in the heavens, you know, is that the thing that's making the mountain ice come down? Is that a former, you know, attitude of too much in the heights, too much in
thinking?
Or it's the old sky god.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So, so this fire serpent melts these frozen heights, or lofty attitudes, perhaps. Which Jung has to protect himself. You know, he's talking about what he's giving up,
and to go into the stone, and you know, in the ancient world, the stone contains the soul of the human being. He's going back into that state.
And he thinks about sunspots. Isn't that strange?
Yeah, I thought it was very strange.
But sunspots are the darkness of the sun.
Yeah.
So, and we associated that darkness of the sun with the worm that attacks the heavens or the heights.
Or maybe that dragon that's down in the water.
Yeah, he calls that the worm, too.
Yeah, let me think about this. Basically, I would say it's showing us that looks real nice, but here's what he's going through.
One
heck of a storm.
You think that looks real nice?
Well, it's balanced. It's largely textual.
Except you have these very strange...
It's shattered in there. The container is just whole... You know, those pieces could go apart or they could come together.
Well, that's maybe more accurate to what he was feeling then.
But you know, that reminded me of the self-bringing itself, coming together, or like the scintilla.
He's holding all the pieces, maybe.
Yeah.
That
light is the
sense.
Only thing that's holding those pieces.
Yeah. That makes sense. Well, let's ponder that. We probably should stop. We got as far as image 58. We haven't really started image 58. We talked a little bit about it, but not the text. So,
Gary, when did you start writing things down in the Red Book?
Later. I think in the 20s.
It's called the... So Huffy said on the 17th, 1917, I produced a drawing with red spots on page 58 of Libram...
That's a later book in this series.
Oh, it's not the red book.
Oh, wait.
No, they take the black book and then he creates the red book from it.
Yeah.
So he was already calling it Lever, whatever it is.
In the black book?
In the black book state?
No, this is the editor. This isn't you in the footnote.
I guess it's confusing because he says, I produced.
Oh.
A drawing with red spots on page 58 of Lever notes.
Let me see here.
So the editor's gone back and...
I forgot to put those quotation marks at the end of Young's quote.
It's clear down to sunspots where that quotation mark is.
Dreams must not then be... Dreams must be a essay written about this material later. I'll check on that, find out what it is. So it's Jung's commentary on this section.
That makes sense.
Yeah, that must be what it is. So so you've read to 286. Why don't you read to... well... 288... It's far enough, I think, huh?
To hell.
Read to hell.
Because this is really important now. That, you know, we've seen down, and now we're coming up. You're still alive?
We don't have to go down again to hell.
Well, we probably do, yes.
We're not going to be going to hell.
Thanks for your hard work.
Thank you.
Thank you for yours.
The end, too.